Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 25th of July, Anno Domini 2015. And since we couldn't convince the polka guys to spend an extra hour here, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Jerry Seward.
And we're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose, kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues 5 minutes after the hour. Clearly, Steve Ray, one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest, so there is no YouTube channel today. There is no camera. So you can still hear us on the...
We're lucky.
Yeah. You're lucky. They're all lucky.
We don't have to worry about what's going on.
Right. Well, to the news. Apple is warning users of its latest MacBook Pro about an issue with the laptop that may cause data corruption. They released a firmware update on Wednesday to fix a problem on the laptop's flash storage component. The 15-inch mid-2015 range Retina model is affected, with corruption occurring in rare cases, they said. News of the warning comes as thousands of MacBook owners are campaigning for action over stains appearing on the laptop's Retina screen. Users that have been affected by stains spreading across their laptops are worried about the expensive service fees they will have to pay once the warranties or protection plans expire. However, the firmware update on the latest model does not sound like a major problem at the moment, particularly since it's a free update. It's not like a massive product recall in the same light as a car that, say, has a faulty brake system or can be controlled over the internet. The newest 15-inch MacBook Pro is the slimmest and lightest to date and sells for a starting price of $2,500. But between this and StainGate, analysts are starting to worry. So our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is data corruption in the new MacBook Pro. And the choices are pro users can't get a break, I'll be updating today, glad I didn't buy one, and Mac what now? So far we've got 31 votes and Mac what now is in the lead, followed closely by glad I didn't buy one. Of course, I know you'll have a lot more to say about this, so you can join us in the forum. Scroll down on the right-hand side of the page until you see fascinating stuff. The first choice there is the forums. The second forum is the poll discussion. And the first item in the poll discussion is 25 July 15, data corruption in the new MacBook. There are two posts already. Feel free to join in the mayhem, the merriment, online. And, of course, you can also give us a call about this, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll-free 1-800-790-0415. You know, this is the kind of thing that we see fairly regularly when it comes to, and I hate to say this, the less expensive components. And I'm surprised that it happened to Apple, but I guess everybody's looking to save money somewhere.
Well, like anybody else, you know, they're trying to save money, and that's the unfortunate part about it. You know, a lot of this stuff is being farmed out to other third world countries. That's why at my place of work, I love the signs that they're putting on the machines and some of the stuff coming in. Assembled in the U.S.
Yeah.
Yeah, all the other parts are either from Mexico, China.
Yeah, right, but they're assembled.
Yeah, they're assembled in the U.S.
Well, that's just because it's cheaper to import parts than it is to import devices.
What was it? I just saw on Facebook, as a matter of fact, some folks were getting some serious burns from flip-flops because of the they're bright-colored flip-flops. But because of they were from China, and because of the dye that they were using, were causing burns, you know, where the thing goes between your toe
oh,
and then
yeah,
around.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, there's photos out there of these folks getting severe burns, and they had to recall a bunch of these flip-flops because the whatever dye or that they used it was causing burns in people's feet.
Wow.
And you can see the whole line where the flip-flop would go over the foot.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's not good.
No.
But one of the problems that we see in general is that everybody's trying to use flash drives now, the SSD drives.
Well, they're faster.
They're faster.
No moving parts.
Right. They're faster. There's no moving parts. The problem is they need to be manufactured better than regular hard drives.
You're very polite.
I am very polite. And in many places, they are not. And they have failure rates. Generally, let's say you buy a 16 gig SSD card, solid state drive. That's generally actually like a 20 or 25 gig device, but there's a bunch of extra space on there so that, and the system actually polices itself.
Mm-hmm.
So that as bits and parts of it die,
right,
it's moved stuff over to other places and you don't lose out.
Yeah, maps that areas being bad.
But clearly that's what is happening with the MacBooks. It's corrupting the data on your machine because the SSD cards are dying.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's actually fixable. You know, we talked last week about StainGate, about the fact that there's all these horrible marks all over the Retina screens on a bunch of MacBook Pros.
Mm-hmm.
That is a mechanical issue, and fixing that is difficult and expensive and painful. This is just a firmware upgrade.
Yeah.
They just need to fix their little algorithm that says, when do we assume a cell is dying and move the data out of it to somewhere else?
Oh, it's just probably a bad Mac party that they went to, and, you know, the code.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, let's put this in.
Yeah, exactly.
Oops,
but
it didn't
so
work.
It's not a horrible problem it's horrible because you lose your data, but it's not a difficult to solve problem is
mm-hmm.
what I'm
right.
trying to
yeah.
say. Unlike the StainGate problem, this problem.
Yeah, no, that's something serious.
All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hello, Ed. What's up?
Hi. I have a couple of different password problems. One's on an iPhone, the other's Internet Explorer. On the iPhone, my daughter changed the password to an iPhone 4 and forgot what it is.
Oh, my God.
Okay. So, is there any way to deal with this?
Well, the only you can't get into the phone at all.
Right.
Yeah, that's an issue.
That's going to have to be a hard reset.
You're gonna have to do a hard reset on the phone and just redo everything.
Okay, how do I do that?
It's an iPhone what now?
4.
An iPhone 4, okay. Yeah, but you can't get into it, can you?
No.
See, he might have to take it back to, like, Steve's Jesse Group or one of those places.
Yeah.
And have them... Or no, where'd you get the phone from?
Verizon.
Then I would take it back to the Verizon folks, and you take it back to their tech people back there, and 10-to-1 odds, they could probably do it a lot quicker and doing the reset, the hard reset,
uh-huh,
faster than you can.
Okay.
The basic way this works is, I don't know if it works when you can't even get into the phone, but theoretically, the if you simultaneously hold the on-off button on the top,
yeah,
and then let excuse me. Let the phone turn off. That's the thing. I don't even know if you can do that. But if you can, turn the phone off.
Yeah, I can do that.
And then what you do is turn the phone back on by, again, pressing that button. Only hold it in until that Apple logo appears.
Uh-huh.
Because other than that, I don't really know what to tell you about how to do that.
That's what I'm saying. Usually if you go to the Verizon
or you
folks,
can hold the on-off button and the home button at the same time again, until that Apple logo appears, and then you should be able to reset the phone. But if you can't even get into it, you need to do that hard reset. And again, bringing it to where you got it from might be the easiest way to handle that.
And less frustration.
And don't ever let your daughter touch your phone again.
Right. Okay. Now, I hope a simpler problem is on Internet Explorer, I think it's 7 that I have, I can't find the passwords that I entered. You know, it saves passwords, but I can't figure out where it saves them to.
He
said Internet.
Which version of Windows?
7.
I don't have...
Okay, where does it store the passwords?
Isn't that under the settings and security?
I
know that's with Foxfire. Question. You go under the settings, and then there's a security tab, and you can see all the usernames and that's saved, and then you got to press another little button that says show passwords.
Right, I remember that on Foxfire, but
yeah,
Okay, here's the thing. And under, oh dear, under Internet Explorer, there's that little gear icon in the corner.
Yeah, up in the upper right hand corner.
That brings up things like Internet. Yep. Okay, so go to Internet Options, switch to the Content tab.
Yep.
Right? Under Autocomplete. See, they're kind of hiding it from you. Under autocomplete.
There is no autocomplete here. Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. It is under
yeah, click the settings button.
Yeah, I see it. Yep.
And then you can click manage passwords to open the credential manager.
Usernames and passwords on forms. Ask me before saving password.
And right under that, it should say manage passwords.
No, it says delete autocomplete history.
In between that and ask me before saving passwords, there should be a manage passwords button.
Well, unfortunately, there isn't.
Well, that's a problem.
Because I don't think it sounds like it's saving them.
Well, it is.
I don't think it is correctly. Not if it's not creating that list.
Interesting.
Does it ask you when you when you do put in a password using Internet Explorer and putting in the password and all that, does it say that... You know, prompt you to save it?
I believe so.
Okay, under... Okay.
Roof. Believe so and actually doing it are two things.
Well, right, but here's an alternate way thing to try.
Okay.
In the control panel, under user accounts, and I believe it's called user accounts and family safety on Windows 7, but it's user accounts in some form, there is something called the credential manager. And when you open that, one of the choices should be web credentials, and you should see your web passwords. Actually, you'll see a bunch of asterisks, and there's a show button next to the password, and you'll have to type your Windows account password in order to see those passwords.
It has manage your credentials?
There's something called the... Okay.
I'm in the control panel, user accounts.
User accounts and family safety?
No, it just said user accounts.
I don't know which version you... Okay, there should be something called the credential manager. Also, you can just do it... Look, here's the easiest thing to do. Close all that out. Go to the start button and type credential manager.
Okay, yeah, I found credential manager. Okay.
Okay, in that should be a choice called web credentials.
Window credentials, certificate-based credentials, and generic credentials.
What does it say?
Windows credentials, certificate-based credentials, and generic credentials.
I don't know what to tell you then. I truly do not.
There's a Windows vault also.
Well, look, I'm sorry, but look in those. Okay. You can also download a program called IE Passview.
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 Okay.
I cannot access it from here because of there's a lovely firewall, but it's called IE Passview.
Okay.
It's from a company called Nirsoft, NIRSOFT, and that should get you to them just as easily.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't have a better answer for you.
That's fine. I appreciate your help.
All right. Good luck.
Thank you.
Yeah, unfortunately, as Microsoft keeps changing Windows around, these things happen. All right, listen, we're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Jerry Seward, Dave Enright, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 20 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Why? That would be Sound Bites, right here on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more sound bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Jerry Seward.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. As you've heard, of course, Steve Ray is one step ahead of the law somewhere in the Midwest, so we do not have the camera here, so we are not on YouTube, but we are live here and, of course, streaming live on jazz901.org. Dave has taken complete advantage of that and removed his pants. So, luckily, you're missing that. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Carl.
You got to wait a minute before.
Yeah, okay.
You got to remember, I control the board. You don't get on the air.
We control the horizontal.
I control everything. Just remember you.
I will. But I notice you didn't deny it. Our next caller is Carl from Pottstown, PA. Welcome, Carl. What's up?
It's the visual.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Okay. I have a question about Revo Uninstaller.
Sure.
I have Revo Uninstaller Pro.
Mm-hmm.
And the machine's running Windows 7. Pro.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when I installed my software, the first piece of software I installed was Revo Uninstaller,
mm-hmm.
because I figured if I did that first, it would trace the other programs that I install afterwards.
Correct.
So I've got it just a couple of months ago now that I did this, and I just brought up Revo, apparently it didn't trace any of the programs that I installed. When I could click on traced programs, screen is blank.
When
so
you,
it's like it didn't trace anything.
But when you open up Revo Uninstaller Pro, you know how it'll populate the whole screen with the programs that it finds?
Right.
None of them are there?
No. If I click on the tab that says All Programs, then of course all the programs show up.
Yeah.
But if I click on the tab that says Traced Programs, they all go away. There's nothing been traced, apparently.
Yeah, but what happens, though, if, when you do select all programs, and say you select one of those to uninstall, does it completely remove it?
Yes.
Okay. Well, then it's doing its job. I don't know about the trace part of it, but the main reason we suggested Revo Uninstaller was because people have the habit of putting programs on, taking them off, putting them on, you know, other programs on, and it just keeps adding bulk to the registry. Because all Windows does is turn off one bit in the registry. The items are still there, and it just kind of skips over it when it's scanning it. But it makes it a longer list to go through. But by using Revo Uninstaller, it actually removes those items from your registry, keeping it a shorter, smaller list, so boot up and everything else is a lot faster and a lot cleaner.
Let me ask you a quick question, if I may. When you installed Revo Uninstaller Pro, did you turn on monitoring?
I don't remember doing that.
Yeah, that's probably why. Monitoring or tracing is available in Revo Uninstaller Pro, but it's not turned on by default because it slows things down. It slows down installations.
Okay.
And people complained. Because people complained. So you have to turn it on. That really, honestly, is right there in the instructions for the software. So unfortunately, that's the way to to make tracing work.
Okay, well, I'll know better for next time.
I'm so sorry. Sorry.
All right, thanks a lot for your help. Talk to you later.
Yep, bye-bye. Yeah, unfortunately, it's not, like we said, it's not automatic, unfortunately, and consequently, you have to turn it on, and if you didn't turn it on, then it's not there. It's just not, I mean, you can still do, Revo One Installer still works, but it's not going to be that automatic. The tracing isn't going to work, so it's going to depend on its own database as opposed to what actually happened when it was installed. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Mark from Henrietta, New York. Welcome, Mark. What's up?
Hi, guys. I called a couple of weeks ago to tell you about the speed problems between DSL lines and Roadrunner.
Yeah.
And after I got off the air, you mentioned things that made me think you didn't get the new picture. You don't get 3 megabits down anymore.
With which one?
We'll come back and tell you you're getting like 695 down and 1.1 up. But as soon as you start to download any big files, they're running full packet inspection, and the data packets get slammed down to about 920 KB and average there and just sit there. And it doesn't matter whether you're on Roadrunner or if you're on the phone line on the DSL.
Huh.
Yeah, and that leads me to a request for Nick. Can you, next time you download some large file, start paying attention to the speed you're getting with Greenlight, because it could be the phone company and the cable company, or it could be something else, because every source I go to on both line sets gives me the same speed, and I'm sort of wondering if somebody else has got their fingers in the pie.
Well, that's certainly a possibility. I will be happy to check that next time I download something overly large. In fact, I could just go download a version of Linux.
Yeah, that'll do it, because that's one of the places I see it.
Yeah. I'll be happy to do that. I've been getting ludicrous speed from my downloads, but I haven't paid that kind of attention to it yet. But I'll be happy to do that. I'm sure there's also, of course, that difference between megabits per second and megabytes per second.
Yeah, but I'm looking at the same setup with the same speed numbers, and 2 months ago I was seeing 3 megabit. Now I'm seeing 920K.
Yeah, that's an issue somewhere.
Yeah,
that really needs to be dealt with. I don't honestly know. Obviously, I don't. Time Warner and I are having our own issues at the moment.
I think everybody is. I think Time Warner's got some major problems going on right now.
Yeah, but this has been going on. Mine's been going on for like 2 months. I'm very unhappy. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. And it's actually, in my case, it's with the television signal, not with DSL, obviously, or not with cable, obviously, internet, obviously, because I've got green light. But, and that's been rock solid. But I will check that. It is unlikely that they are doing anything because they don't care. They have no other business they're trying to protect.
I get it.
Right. So they don't care if I'm streaming Netflix all day long, which I've been doing more and more since my television signal is such crap.
Mm-hmm.
They don't care if I'm downloading big files. They don't care.
That's pretty much it.
So there may well be a difference, but I will look into that.
Okay, no, I appreciate that. I look forward to hearing it on the air.
Yeah, thanks.
Okay,
I will do that.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Actually, I won't do it until I write it down. okay. Yeah, what Mark is talking about is there's the raw speed that you can get from your download, right? From your cable or DSL or fiber system. There's that raw speed, which is what they advertise and what you're paying for. And you can test that out with a speed test program. Speedtest.net is one of the most well-known ones.
Yep.
And that will give you the raw speed of your connection. But the raw speed of your connection actually has absolutely nothing to do with how fast your connection is in the real world. Because generally when you're testing, they're testing to the closest drop, which may be right on the same network. So that will test your raw speed, which is, again, what you're paying for. But when, for example, I go to Ubuntu.org and download the latest Xubuntu, it's gone out over the internet, and now all bets are off. I have no idea how many connections are between me and them, how fast they are, how many problems they may be having. And the thing Mark is talking, and that will slow it down in and of itself. So I can also go to one server and get fairly fast downloads, go to another server and get ridiculously slow downloads. It's not my connection. It's whatever's in between me and that other server, how bombed that server is with requests right now, et cetera, et cetera. So, for example, if I go to, we'll take Ubuntu.org again, the day they announce a new version of Ubuntu, it's going to be pretty slow. So there's like a zillion people downloading. If I go a week and a half or a month and a half later, it'll be pretty zippy. So it's also the load on the server at the other end. But what Mark is talking about is something different. What we're seeing other providers do, and I don't know that Roadrunner is doing this, the DSL folks, Frontier. I don't know that either of them is doing this. I'm not accusing them of this. I have no idea if it's being done here. But we've seen in other places that one of the things they do is a packet inspection. So every packet that comes down the line to you gets looked at by one of their servers. That can be very good if they're looking for viruses and Trojans and blah, mm-hmm. blah, blah.
Right.
It can be useful to them if they're looking to charge you different amounts, which some places do, depending on what you download. So, for example, at a place like, let's take as an example Comcast, which we don't have currently here, but we may.
Not going to happen.
No.
Okay, good.
Jerry says no way.
So I'll talk about them because they're not around here.
That's
safe. May look at and say, well, if you download something that's from us, we won't count that against your quota for the month.
And that's, you know, one of the basics of net neutrality is mm-hmm. that your internet provider should treat all traffic equally the same,
right.
regardless of what it is or where it comes from. They shouldn't be shaping their traffic and giving priority to certain services that mm-hmm. they might make money from or charge more for, or whatever. The quality of service should be the same regardless of what you're getting.
Right.
Right.
It's you, and the consumer, who decides what you want and how fast you want to get it.
Well, third world right. countries get a lot better service and data rates and everything else than we do here in the U.S.
Not than me.
You and me both. Ain't happening.
But
here.
Here's the
for
thing.
For most of us, but the 1% out there, like Nick here, are lucky enough.
Yeah. I know you all hate me, and that's fine. I'm comfortable with that. But here's the thing. You can go over to my house anytime. Here's the thing.
We'll sit outside his driveway.
I'll give you my...
Okay.
No greater love hath a man than he will hand somebody his modem, his wireless password. Yeah. But they, you know, there's a million reasons they do that, and not all of them are bad. They may be looking to see where they need to provide better service, et cetera, et cetera. So they're not necessarily bad reasons for looking at the traffic, but every packet they look at slows down that packet because it comes into one of their servers, gets pulled apart,
mm-hmm.
Looked at, put back together, and sent on its way. Now, that happens in a millisecond, but if there's a billion packets
yeah.
going through and each one takes a millisecond,
and
you can
also,
do the math yourself.
And also the speed of the machine and everything else.
Right.
I mean, because not all machines are equal across the network.
Right.
No, there's hundreds of factors that would
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just where the bottleneck is going to be moved
exactly.
to.
And right. with cable service as opposed to DSL service, I mean, you're sharing that bandwidth with people within your neighborhood node.
Yeah.
So if there's a great lot of congestion at that particular time in your neighborhood, things are going to be slower than other times.
And that's where I think Greenlight, again, is opposing, you know, some...
nobody else is on my line.
...threat to the Rochester area.
Yeah, I mean, nobody else is on my line. It used to be when I had a cable connection, a slow 20 megabit cable connection, during, you know, at 3 a.m. Now, this actually worked for me because I'm up working at 3 a.m. At 3 a.m., I owned the internet, right? I was getting my full 10 meg down, actually, not 20. I was getting my full 10 meg. But if I went on at 5 or 7 or 8 or 9 o'clock at night, I was way down in the 1 megabit, 2 megabit area. So that also has a problem, rather an issue with that. So, all right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Bill, who's calling from his car. I hope you're not driving.
No, I'm not, Nick. Thank you. This is your favorite electrician from RIT days.
Bill, how are you?
How are you?
Good.
Nice to hear your voice again. I have a problem, three part. The first problem is Google Chrome seems to be able to change the name of Internet Explorer to Internet Explorer 2 and redirect itself. And so when I come back the next time, it's now Google Chrome. I've deleted everything of Google Chrome out of my system, but it's done it a few times. The next problem I have is in my Outlook Express email is somewhere in my preferences I have a block that prevents me from clicking on a link and going outside Outlook Express. It says the administrator has blocked this, blah, blah. And I've never Outlook, just plain Outlook. And the, what was the third thing? My wife is back. What's the third thing?
The Google thing popping up.
And we've done a security tango dance a number of times. We can't seem to get rid of ads by block and surf. And I'll listen to your answers off on the air. Thank you.
All right. Let's start with the easiest one. Outlook Express email. Microsoft themselves made that change to their software because so many people we're getting so much junk from links, they now actually prevent you from clicking on links. The thing you have to do now is copy and paste. That's the best way to do it. And they did that on purpose so that you will actually think before clicking on a link. And that actually rhymes. It doesn't scan well, but it rhymes. All right, Bill. You can get back on the road. We're going to take a quick break. I will answer the remainder of your questions when we come back in just a minute or two with Jerry Seward, Dave Enright, Nick Francesco, and you. 40 minutes after the hour, the longest-running computer show in the known universe. We are Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Computer talk you can understand. More Sound Bites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Jerry Seward.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites.
Oh, well, we were talking about, before we go to that call.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to share a story with you.
Here we go. All right, kiddies, sit back.
Yeah, that should be.
Grab a mug of hot cocoa, put your footy jammies on, and sit in a semicircle around the rocking chair because
it's been a while.
Whether you like it or not,
here I go.
It's time for Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave!
Oh,
how did I even remember that?
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on a minute.
There we go. Now we're talking.
There it is.
All right, kiddies, it's that time once again. Grab a mug of hot cocoa, put on your footy jammies, and sit in a semicircle around the rocking chair, because it's time once again for Story Hour with Uncle Dave. Uncle Dave? Uncle Dave!
Oh, it's been too long. Well, I was talking with a friend at work, and just going back and forth.
You have friends at work?
Yeah, I got maybe a couple.
Wow.
I know, don't tell them. But anyways, we're sitting there, and we're talking about Facebook. And we're talking about how folks live, some folks just live their lives on Facebook. And like me, I use it a lot to stay in touch with both family members, a number of folks I was in the service area with, and just other general friends and that. And some of the folks from Soundbites. Well, But we're going back and forth, and this one individual friend that I work with, he's going, yeah. And he posts a lot with Facebook. But have you ever had a mother-in-law defriend you from Facebook? Because she didn't like your post?
Wow. Oh,
She defriended
wow.
him. Your mother-in-law defriends you
wow.
from Facebook because she doesn't like what you're saying. And I mean, this individual, he's very meek. You know, he's... It's his slant on some of this stuff.
Evidently, well, Christmas is going to be a little awkward.
You think?
Wow.
I have never heard somebody being an in-law defriending you on Facebook. Yeah. I mean, that's an all-new low, isn't it?
I've never heard that. That's kind of amazing.
I mean, I couldn't stop laughing. I go, you can't be serious. He goes, oh, yes, I am. She saw that comment and she defriended me. I go, whoa, what'd you say? He wouldn't tell me because, you know what? It'd be great.
It had to be something good. Wow.
Of course, I don't have any in-laws.
Right. Neither do I any longer. Yeah. All right, Matt, before we go back to the phones, let's finish with Bill's problem.
Oh, yeah. I forgot all about
Yeah, you
it.
Kind of jumped right in the top
about
of Bill.
That.
Sorry,
yeah.
Bill. But here's the deal. The other problem you have... changing the name of Internet Explorer and changing it to TWO, and the black and surf edge by black insert thing. That sounds to me like you've been caught by a rootkit. And the only way you're really going to fix that is you have to, well... Here's what has to be done. You take the hard drive out,
mm-hmm.
put it in another machine, boot that machine from its own hard drive
right.
so that the rootkit on the second hard drive doesn't activate, and then you can clean the machine. Most people do not do that themselves. Most people take it to a reputable dealer and have them do it for you.
Yeah, because we've got the equipment to literally pull it out
right.
and isolate it. And then there's other software that we run. When we pull the hard drive out and set it on the test bench, we're running other software that will then go into that a drive, again, keeping it isolated so it doesn't, you know, start trying to pull stuff over and creep onto my drive. You know, I'd sit there and run the software, and it will find... those problems and get rid of it.
Right. So you might want to give somebody a call at, oh, I don't know, 442-4843. That was it. Give somebody a call and take it in and have them.
Yeah, because even once you get the rootkit out, all right, that gets rid of the initial problem.
Right.
Then you normally have to put it back into the machine. And then run other software. And again, folks who are sitting there, well, I run this one. But we always recommend, you know, right now the Super Anti-Spyware and the Malware Bytes. Because no one program does it all. To think that, you know, it's going to get rid of all of it. No. That's why we recommend two. And running the two will, for the most part, keep your machine pretty much clean. Will it do it all? No, because the internet is like a big game of leapfrog for us. We can sit there and tell you folks to run this and that programs because they have patches out there. But then these idiots, well, they're not idiots because they're making money off of it, find other ways around it to steal your information. Because it's not so much the viruses that are prevalent out there anymore. It's more the malware that they want to get in there and steal your information. Because even if they can just steal, say, your email address list book, they can turn around and sell that to other spammers. And they make money off of it. You know, because they can go to the underground, other spammers, and say, you know what, give me $50, I'll give you a million email addresses, and you can use that to spam. And they do it. And so they're making money off it. Whereas before writing viruses, that just didn't get them anything. So, you know, you got to be due diligent and run both.
Right. Okay. I hope that comes a little closer to answering your questions, Bill. And I'm sorry it took so long, but we got you there. Back to the phones.
Well, he's still listening. Yeah. Wouldn't he be? We still got over another hour.
Yeah, that's right. Now back to the phones. Our next caller is Andy from Brockport, New York. Welcome, Andy. What's up?
Hi. I got a Chromebook, and I've been going through some growing pains with it. And right now my problem is that I have duplicate links on my Chromebook. I have a PC and I have a Chromebook. And now I have duplicate links. Everything's, you know, doubled. And I'm trying to figure out how I could just get rid of this problem and just have one set of links and not worry about it anymore.
And what you did was what you did was at some point you turned on sharing bookmarks.
Yeah.
And that sharing went both ways, and so now one of them at least, if not both, are doubled.
Right. Right. And the beauty of the Chromebook and of Chrome is that I got one, you know, I use the same bookmarks every place. No matter where I go, I can use the bookmarks, and it's a great thing. So is there a way to like clear it out and then, you know, just reset, you know, with maybe, I've exported them, all my links. Is it like, can I just clear them out of both computers and then just load one with those links again?
Well, yes.
And then it would duplicate back over?
Yes. Here's what I would do first. Here's the way I would solve this, I think, first. I would go in and turn off the syncing, at least the bookmark syncing, if not everything. And then reset your whole system. I'm talking about the Chromebook.
Okay, the Chromebook. Reset the Chromebook, okay?
Right. If you reset the Chromebook entirely, you don't even have to go that far, actually. You can uncheck bookmarks, then delete all of your bookmarks, and then turn it back on again.
Okay.
Because that's the one that's doubled, right?
No, actually, the PC is and the Chromebook.
Ah, that's an issue.
Yeah.
Well,
Like I said, I have an export of all my bookmarks, you know, from a week ago, and I'd be satisfied with that, you know.
Right.
So I do have one set of bookmarks I could use as a backup.
Well, I would install that one and not turn on bookmarks yet. Okay? And then I would do the same thing on the Chromebook, and then turn on syncing, see what happens.
Okay.
It's kind of a mystery as to exactly how that works, but theoretically it should work fine. There must have been some form of glitch.
Yeah, and I've been having, you know, there. Okay, I'm not going to. But I do like to sync the bookmarks. Can I eventually sync them again? Turn on the syncing?
Yes, I would suggest that once the two of the two. Hi, how are you? Once the two machines are correct, right, with your backup bookmarks.
Uh huh.
Then I would turn on syncing. Start with the Chrome. It doesn't matter. Start with one of them. See what happens, and then if that works fine, turn on the other one.
Okay, that's fine. So a little bit of experiment. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
Another quick question on the Chromebook. The beauty of the Chromebook is I'm able to, you know, have my Google Drive on there.
Yep.
But when I run into a situation, if I don't have internet access, I want to still have my Google Drive available.
Yeah.
Okay. And it seems to work with, it doesn't seem to work with all my documents, all my Windows documents or text documents or whatever documents I have. I don't have a lot. I purposely only have like a gigabyte on my Google Drive.
Right.
So it's not like I have tons of space. It's just a few things I like to have wherever I am. So is there a way on the Chromebook to get a local without having to download it and do some other crazy thing?
Well, one of the things that you can do is, beg your pardon, you can turn on offline mode. In Google Drive. And then the first time you do that, it'll take a while to synchronize. But then what I do, because I run into this same situation all the time.
Okay.
So all I have to remember to do is to discipline myself, before I leave the house, I turn on my Chromebook for a couple of minutes. And it will synchronize everything that wasn't synchronized since the last time I turned it on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I'm looking at it right now. It is turned on, and but it says it's only going to sync Google Docs, Sheets, slides, and drawings.
Right.
It kind of is telling me that it's not going to sync everything. It's not going to sync PDF files. It's not going to sync a Word document or an Excel document.
Right. No, and it will not do those things.
Okay.
I beg your pardon. I did not understand. I beg your pardon. Yes, you will have to, if you want to take one or more of those with you, you will have to download them.
Okay, good. All right.
And I'm sorry, I did not understand what you were asking.
No, I understand. And so, and what I'm going to do for these handful of things that I have up there, I'll just convert them to Google Docs and stuff and just use them as that.
Well, like I've been saying, that's one of the beautiful things about Google Drive. When you upload something, you can set Google Drive to automatically convert for you.
Yeah.
And anything you upload in Google Drive format does not count against your quota.
Right.
So like I said, I've got 15,000 plus documents in Google Drive, and I'm using barely a gig.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And most of that is a movie and a bunch of PDFs.
Yeah, exactly. All right, one more quick question.
Yeah.
Is there a way to have it not go to sleep when you close the cover?
I haven't found one.
Okay.
And if you do, call me immediately. Immediately.
Okay, one more quick question because I got a list here. What about security software? Isn't it built into the Chromebook and things like that, into the operating system?
Yes. Okay, yes, great. It is. In point of fact, the operating system, you're going to love this, the operating system on a Chromebook is read-only.
Okay.
The only time it's writable is when it is updating, and it's a very special process it goes through to be sure it's going to the right place and doing the right stuff and the yada, yada, yada. And there's two copies of it in there. And if it boots up and discovers that those two copies are different, it will not boot it until it checks against Google's servers and downloads a clean copy of itself.
Okay. And so if I go back to my bookmark issue, what if I did a power wash on the Chromebook? Would that, and then just had my links on my PC correctly?
If you get the PC working correctly,
yeah,
and then do a power wash on your Chromebook,
yeah,
and then sync, it should work fine.
Yeah, just to let everybody know, power wash is great. It, you know, because everything's online, everything just comes right back to where it was, and you know,
right. Power wash essentially sets your Chromebook back to the way it was day one.
Exactly.
And all you have to do is log in with the same username and password you've been using, and everything comes back. All your apps, all your everything.
All right, great.
Everything.
Thank you.
Yeah.
All right, have a great day.
I intend to. You too.
All right, bye.
All right, bye-bye. It's one of the many, many reasons I love the Chromebook.
Mm-hmm.
And I've said this many times before, I'm fearless with it. I take it everywhere because unless you have my password, you got nothing.
Yeah.
Why would you want to disable sleep mode when you close the cover unless you had something running you wanted to keep running?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you're right.
There is a Chrome extension for OS called Keep Awake.
Oh, no kidding.
That'll do this for you.
I did not know this.
Even with
All right. So, Andy, there's an extension called Keep Awake.
And that's with the lid closed?
Yeah, it's made by Google, it says, and it can disable Chromebook sleep mode.
Google would think of that.
Both if the lid is closed or when the sleep mode timeout is reached.
Right. Okay.
I would not want that, but I can see where somebody would, and so Andy, being one of those, can now get it. Very, very cool. Very, very cool. Thank you. All right. That's it. We're done for this first hour. You wasted an entire hour of your life, but you're going to get a chance to do it again because you're not a quick learner. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Jerry Seward, with Dave Enright, with me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 1 o'clock, and we'll be back with a whole lot more sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Jerry Seward.
And at 4 minutes after the hour, we are hurtling headlong into the second hour of the longest-running computer show in the known universe. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. For those of you who missed the first hour, where the heck were you? More importantly, you should know that Steve is not with us this week. He's one step ahead of the law in the Midwest. Jerry Seward has nobly stepped in.
Graciously.
And graciously stepped in to provide assistance for us today. But it does mean that we do not have the YouTube channel up this week. You can still clearly, if you're listening, you know that it's not up. But you can hear us live, and you can listen to us on the live stream.
Well, we've always said we have faces for radio, not TV.
Exactly. Exactly. And we did manage to get Dave to put his pants back on, even though there's no camera. So
there's Rob. You forget?
Oh, that's right. Rob's looking over there.
Yeah. No.
I hope he's been recording the last hour. That'll be good.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. And you can give us a call, by the way, and join the party. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Or, of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0415. On Thursday, an Intel spokes robot confirmed that the company is working to patch a minor bug that will reduce the battery life of some Windows 10 machines by less than 10%. The good news is that once fixed, Intel expects the battery life of a Windows 10 PC to be on par with a Windows 8 PC. That is to say, fair. With the Windows 10, my Chromebook gets 9 hours of battery life, so I don't care. With the Windows 10 launch just days away on July 29th, Intel, Microsoft, app developers, and hardware makers are working to finalize the drivers and fix bugs. Microsoft, for example, issued an update for Intel's HD graphics integrated GPU on Thursday for its Surface line, along with a firmware update that failed to update for many people. Oops. So if you have a Surface and it failed to update, sorry. In some sense, both Intel and Microsoft are on an intercept course, with Microsoft Windows 10 scheduled to hit the market shortly before Intel is expected to begin shipping its next-generation Skylake chips. The combination of new drivers, new software, new hardware usually means a fertile ground for bugs, which all parties are busily patching, Intel among them.
Intel and Microsoft are working to optimize drivers.
Oh, no, this is an Intel spokes robot. Okay, Intel and Microsoft are working to optimize drivers for battery performance on Windows 10 across Intel platforms, an Intel spokes robot said. While we are working on technical optimizations, we have seen very minor hits to battery life, but even the upper end of what we've seen is below 10%. We do know that we expect battery life on the Windows 10 systems to be nearly the same as on Windows 8.1 systems once the final Windows 10 drivers have been updated and released. So why does this matter? Well, in the grand scheme of things, it appears that the Intel bug will be hammered out. But this should remind you that any new hardware or operating system bugs can do more than cause visual glitches. They can affect the performance of your system. And, of course, we don't know how long it will be until it solves. For now, Microsoft's code base has been essentially frozen, with no new builds of Windows 10 expected until launch day. Behind the scenes, however, sources have begun to report that July 29th could bring with it a potentially enormous day zero software update in conjunction with Windows 10. And what that means is, first you will update to Windows 10. Lord knows how long that will take. And then you will update that brand new installation of Windows 10. And Lord knows how long that will take. So on July 29th, or whatever day you actually get your update, because so many of us will not get it day one. Whatever day you get your update, take the day off, make a second cup of coffee, or have an adult beverage. Because the rest of your day is completely non-productive.
Or just let it go overnight.
Right.
At least to recoup some of your time. be productive, you know, start it at night.
And that doesn't even count the Microsoft apps, like Mail and Xbox and stuff. So Microsoft offered this oblique statement.
A benefit of delivering Windows 10 as a service means we continue to offer ongoing innovations and security updates, continually improving Windows 10.
So are you planning to update as soon as possible, or are you going to wait? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, I've got one machine I'm going to try it on.
Well, I've got a laptop that's actually a production box when I'm teaching, so I'm pretty likely not going to update that day one.
Yeah.
But I do have a virtual box on my Linux machine that I will update.
I figure, you know, give it a shot because it's down, you know, it's on a test bench.
Right.
So if it crashes, oh, well, no biggie. I'll just go back to Windows 7.
Right.
Nothing lost because I've got an image of it.
You've got an image, well, so you can do that.
Good for you, but a lot of listeners are.
Oh, yeah, no, but that's why, you know, if you folks wait, you know, like I was telling folks Thursday night, you know, Windows 10 is coming up. We've had a lot of folks questioning, you know, and asking, should I do it? And they're asked, you know, it's like.
You've got a year to update for free. So if you wait 2 or 3 months, it's not that big a deal.
Right.
However, if you're using Windows 8.1, you'll probably want to update day one.
Well, and I also had some folks say, "All right, but I've got Windows XP." No,
you don't get to update.
You
have to buy.
Oh, yes, you get to update. Put that one as a door wedge to hold the door open as you bring in the new computer and set it up.
Because if you've got a table that's not level,
the
perfect use for that old laptop.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a sad but true thing. There's not. Windows XP will not get a free update. Sorry. Windows 7 and Windows 8.1. Notice not Windows 8. If you never updated to Windows 8.1, you don't get the update. So Windows 7, Windows 8, and 8.1 was a free update, so I don't know why you wouldn't. But Windows 7 and Windows 8.1 will both get the free update to Windows 10. But you're the only one, so... If you're using some other version of Windows, I was telling these guys earlier, I actually found an image for DOS 6.22, and I was going to put that into a virtual box on my Linux machine and play with that. But for those of you, so I want to, you know, I was going, I don't want to go old school, I want to go ancient school. But for those of you who are not using Windows 7 or Windows 8.1, you will not get a free update. All right, to the phones, our first caller in the second hour is Paul from Brighton, New York. Welcome, Paul. What's up?
So I'm thinking that the best thing to do is just wait several months. Why be a beta tester for Microsoft when Windows 7 is working just fine right now? And if it's not broken, why try something new?
Well, that's exactly right, and I believe that, you know, Adam Osborne said it best back in the early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Pioneers are the guys with the arrows in their backs, and those are the, you know, the people who upgrade first are going to find the problems, and God bless them for their sacrifice. But there are a whole bunch of us, and like I said, I've got a virtual box that I will upgrade day one because if it doesn't work, I don't care. But I will not upgrade my production laptop until a couple of months when they've straightened out the zero-day issues.
Yeah, same with me. You know, I'll do it on one of my test bench units because it's no biggie. If it fails on me, I just wipe it out, and I pull back my ghost image of the machine just before I installed that. So.
Right. Most people, however, don't have the luxury. Like I said, I only owned Linux boxes and Chromebooks for decades, but I thought I was going to teach a course that needed a Windows machine because I was going to teach Visual Studio, which requires Windows. So I bought one, and then it turns out I didn't, you know, so I spent the money unknowingly. But the point is, I've got an extra machine, right? So in my case, that upgrade is not going to kill me one way or the other. But for most people, they only have one machine. And if that upgrade goes bad, they're kind of doomed. So I agree with you, Paul. If you don't have to upgrade, and there are those who do have to upgrade, their machine is not working well or whatever it might be. But for those who don't have to upgrade, wait, don't be the pioneer unless you want to play. And you don't sound like you do, Paul.
We lost him.
Oh, we lost him? Sorry, Paul. Don't know what happened to you there. But yeah, well, it is what it is. And so thank you. But yeah, we recommend, we here at Soundbites recommend that unless you want to play, unless you are a pioneer, wait.
Yeah.
Don't be that day one person.
Let us do it.
Let us do it. That's why.
I know, as sick as it sounds, we have fun with it.
That's right.
Remember back in the days when we used to test for Norton?
And do you know nobody has ever sent us money for that?
Corel. I think of all the beta testing that I've done over the past two decades.
Yep. I used to be an official beta tester.
Yes.
Now, if you buy a Windows product, you are an official beta tester.
Oh, yeah. They just...
That's how that works.
Yeah, rolled it out.
They actually used to recruit people to be testers.
Yeah.
And it was a formal process. You wrote stuff out.
Yep.
You explained what you were doing. You did all these things.
We had to submit reports with each revision.
Yep.
Because something would come out and they'd want us to test out this part. And that was the big kudos. If you could actually get it to crash and blow up your machine. I can remember on, Norton's antivirus. Did quite a bit of work on that one when it was first coming out and got to blow that up a couple times and had fun with that. And also, Word. Microsoft Word.
Yep.
Played around with that when they
I did a bunch of Microsoft products. The best, though, was Word Perfect.
Remember the M&Ms they used to always?
They used to always hand out M&Ms. Word Perfect is the only company I was beta testing for that called me.
Oh.
I put in a beta report. Mm-hmm. I had bought a brand new printer, a new Epson printer, that was not on their list and didn't work at all.
Mm-hmm.
They asked me to send them some more information through the normal process, which was fine.
Yeah.
A couple days later, I get an email with a new driver in it, and they said, please install this driver and test it for us. So I tested it. It worked perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote back and said that. About a week later, I got a phone call from them. Hi, this is such and so from Word Perfect. I said, no, it isn't. Who is this really? They said, no, this is us, and we want to know if that driver worked for you. I'm sorry, you actually called me?
Yeah, that is.
What kind of customer support is that?
Yeah, really.
Don't you people you're supposed to ignore me?
Well, I know in Corel, I used to get, they'd open up chat windows or set up chat windows going back and forth. Because, well, that's how I designed the whole Soundbites logo, was using Corel back in the day. And that was, I believe, version 4. And I did a lot of testing on that, and they'd set up to where they'd have sessions that we'd go in, and we'd go back and forth. There was like three others of us in like this conference, and we'd be opening up a message box and going back and forth with questions and answers and comments on what we had found and everything else. But they took a very proactive part in that and learning some of the other things that you could do, again, through other users and testing and breaking things. That was fun.
Yeah. Oh, I really shouldn't skip this one. I need to read this.
Yeah, go ahead. We got a minute or so before.
Yeah. And then you can give us a call and we'll chat about this. Microsoft Windows 10 launch is just a few days away, and the latest news from Redmond is that future updates for the Windows 10 home users will be mandatory without any option to turn them off. What was that? Okay. According to its latest release, 10240, distributed to testers, there is a clause in the end user license agreement, which I've actually read, that says by accepting this agreement, you agree to receive these types of automatic updates without any additional notice. According to this addition to the clause, you will no longer get options such as choose when to reboot, choose when to download and install, and never check for updates, which you are familiar with from Windows 8.1. Windows 10 updates will be downloaded and installed automatically. As an end user, you will only get the option to choose when to reboot once the updates have been downloaded and installed. For those on a limited data bandwidth, forced updates from Windows can be a matter of concern, as you do not get the option to decide when to download the updates. Apart from security patches, some updates come with feature updates, and the size of the downloads can go to several hundreds of megabytes. Excuse me, only Windows 10 for business users, that is to say those running the Enterprise Edition, get the option to select only security patches updates and can opt for long-term branch service, the long-term service branch, which is updated once in every 2 or 3 years, actually. So the rest of us will just get our updates whether we like it or not. Thank you, sir. May I have another? Still excited about Windows 10? Planning to update day one or wait? Give us a call. It's 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. And while you're frantically dialing the phone, we will take a quick break and be back in just a couple of minutes with Jerry Seward, Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 20 minutes after the hour, Soundbites, member supported, Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest running computer show. Back to more Soundbites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Jerry Seward.
And at 24 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And before we go any farther, I need to put out this plea. I've had a request from a company called Bridges for Brain Injury. They're a nonprofit organization. This is actually very serious. Bridges for Brain Injury. They're a nonprofit organization that provides home and community-based services for traumatic brain injury survivors. People wrote to me. She has a client in her caseload who's a big fan of Soundbites, listens to our radio show all the time. He suffered a stroke back in 2007. His entire world got turned upside down. He went from owning his own business and everything else to living off Social Security. He had that stroke, couldn't work, couldn't do anything anymore. It's very difficult for him at this point to get into the community, which pretty much isolates him to his home. So he's had a dream to be able to own a computer again, which, of course, at this point he cannot afford, being unable to do a lot of things right now. So what we'd like to do is be able to provide one for him. So if there's anybody out there who could donate a computer, we'd like something fairly recent. I mean, I've got a couple of 15-year-old laptops, but trust me, they're not going to be any good for this person. So if somebody has something fairly recent that they would love to donate, please send me an email at nick@soundbites.org. nick@soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y. Francis would like us to remind you, and I will pass the information on. This would be a really beautiful thing to do with that computer that's not terribly old yet, but you're about to buy a brand new hot box for Windows 10, and this will give you something to do with that older machine. Or it doesn't have to be a Windows box. It could be a Mac, or if somebody would love to buy this person a brand new Chromebook, that would be, they're what, under $200. That would be delightful. So there's that. there's that. We don't do that often, but this happened to be a personal plea. Apple stock. Apple stock fell down and stayed down on Wednesday morning as investors seemed disappointed by another set of record-breaking results. I do not understand investors with Apple. Oh, they made more money than ever before? Well, their stock is crap. Let's sell it.
Exactly.
The big thing is, of course, the lack of fireworks over the Apple Watch sales figures. The stock was off by 5% by lunchtime on Wednesday. It was just ridiculous. Analysts said Apple's investors are frankly spoiled. The sharp plunge in the stock price can partially be attributed to the company's missing projections for iPhone shipments and revenue forecasts, but really it's largely due to the fact that investors have become accustomed to significant earnings beats by Apple. If there's one thing Apple told investors clearly, it's that the iPhone is still the cornerstone to the success of the Apple empire. The company gave no solid sales figures on its latest product, the Apple Watch, which could be part of the problem, although CEO Tim Cook suggested it's already a billion-dollar business and told analysts the possibilities for the watch were, and I quote, enormous. The tech behemoth reported strong sales of its signature phone in the third quarter financial result, 47.5 million iPhones, up more than a third year over year for a net revenue of $31.4 billion. Sales in China were particularly robust, doubling from last year. Mac sales reached 4.8 million units, which is up 9%. The company sold 10.9 million iPads. That was down 18%. Gross margin came in at almost 40%. 40% gross margin. But, as expected, it didn't break out the sales for the newest product, the Watch, into a separate category for the first report since its 24 April launch, instead lumping them into the other section of the filing it created last quarter. But look, if you know everything else Apple sold, and you add up all those numbers, you can figure out what's left is the Watch. All that takes is math. In fact, it's not even math. It's just addition and subtraction. We have a friend who is a math scientist, a math teacher and a math scientist, and he would tell you that addition and subtraction are not actually math. They're just addition and subtraction. So Apple comfortably beat Wall Street's expectations. Its earnings were 4 cents better than predicted, and yet the investors were disappointed. I just hate Apple investors. Every single one of them is clearly a moron. I'm sorry. But when you do better than expected, exactly, when your earnings are that good, and you sell the stock because it's crap, you're an idiot. So what will it take to make Apple investors happy? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415.
Well, like I've said before, when Steve was here, you know, a few weeks ago, Mac just doesn't come out with a lot of new stuff. I mean, a lot of the stuff, the phones, they're just rehashing a lot of that stuff, so it's nothing new and innovative. Granted, the watch, all right, yeah, so it's a watch. But as far as computing and tablets and notebooks and everything else, I mean, back in the day, it seemed like every other week, Steve was saying, oh, well, we got this new machine out and this one and that one, and it's going to be able to do this and do that. They're OSs. You don't hear any big hype about, oh, there's, you know, the Leopard and this, and it's just sort of...
You're right. For so many years, they knocked your socks off every time they had a big announcement. And now it's like, yeah, we had a watch.
Yeah.
Well, you're like last to the market on watches.
Mm-hmm.
LG beat you, for Pete's sake, to market. Samsung beat you. Motorola, everybody beat you. And the watch, okay, you can buy one for $10,000, but that doesn't necessarily make it a good watch. I bought cars for more money than that that were crap.
Yeah.
So you're right. I mean, that's certainly part of it. But the problem is we've come to expect miracles, and nobody does miracles anymore. Not every single time. And I said this when Steve Jobs passed. You know, is the era of Apple over?
Yeah, they used to be revolutionary, and now they're evolutionary.
Exactly right. That's exactly it. And it's a problem for the investors, because investors only ever think short term. They want magic every time, and
that's just not going to happen. I mean, even on the phones. I'm sorry, the Android phones have taken over. The big share that the iPhones are, yeah, okay.
Well, Android and Apple are Windows and Apple.
Mm-hmm.
Windows own 95% of the market.
Yep.
Android phones and watches own 95% of the market.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, still people put out stuff for Apple first. And then complain when they don't make a lot of money. Well, if you sell into 4% of the market.
Yeah.
You're not going to make as much money as if you sell into 96% of the market.
You think?
Sorry. It's just the way it works.
Again, we go back to, oh, that's math.
That's math. It's not math. It's addition and subtraction. There's a difference. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Tom from Brockport, New York. Talk to me, Tom.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. Who am I speaking with?
Sorry, this is Nick.
Ed?
Nick.
Oh, Nick?
Yes.
And?
This is Nick. Dave and Jerry.
Go ahead. Ask your question.
Okay, great. Thank you. I just heard you guys talking about Apple investors.
Yeah.
And I agree with you. You know, they're all looking for, you know, the new best thing, the one more thing that Eve used to always say, you know.
Yep.
And unfortunately, Tim just isn't doing that.
Well, the real difference is that, and this is the thing I said when Steve Jobs passed. Apple used to be a cult of personality. There
right.
was one guy at the top who honestly couldn't give two flying hoots about anybody else's opinion on anything.
Yeah.
He wanted a music player. He built a music player.
Right.
You know, and now we have a company that's run like a corporation. It's a bunch
sure.
of people who sit around in a room and say, what don't we have that everybody else has? Oh, yeah, watch. Right?
Yeah.
So it's a very different company, and that makes investors disappointed.
And it makes the consumer disappointed as well.
Yes, because there are a lot of people. There are always going to be people who will just buy a Mac because they think it's a better hardware product and they like using it. But there
yeah.
are many people who buy Macs because Apple products because they've bought into they've drunk the Kool-Aid.
Uh-huh.
They bought into the Apple culture.
Sure.
And those people are disappointed when something new comes out and it's only better, not incredible.
Right. Now, let me say this. I have been in the PC and Mac community for the majority of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I started out with PCs, got my degree, CNA, A+, all that. Went for the, the Apple support.
Yep.
I went for that. Unfortunately, back in 2010, they switched over while I was doing the modules. So there went $300.
Right, because they don't give you any credit for what used to be.
No.
Right.
So, you know, there went that. But I still do a lot of, work for friends and family. And as far as all of my Apple fans, not a single one is interested in the watch.
I have seen exactly one Apple Watch in the wild. One. I've seen, and let's not forget, I spend a lot of time at RIT, where there are an amazing number of tech people. I've still seen exactly one Apple Watch, and maybe two. Maybe, because I didn't really see the other one close up. Could have been
okay.
an LG. It was a square watch. But I've seen a lot of Motorola's and LG watches. And I'm just not seeing Apple people buying the watch. And I would like to talk to anybody who bought an Android watch 6 months ago and if they're actually still wearing it for any other reason than inertia.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, it's great to have. I talked to one guy recently. I said, why are you still wearing that watch? And he said, well, I get all my alarms on it. Oh, okay. Your phone doesn't do alarms anymore? Or what? And he said, no. It's right there on the watch. Okay. All right, fine. You know, whatever excuse you have to be wearing the watch. But most people, I don't see, you know, the whole draw heart, draw an SOS, draw all those little things on the watch,
right.
And that being overly useful for real.
Yeah, and I mean, you got to have the phone on you, so it's like it's just like a dual purpose, you know?
Right. To me, the phone isn't a whole lot different from headsets. I'd rather the watch isn't a whole lot different from headphones.
Right.
You still have to have the phone with you.
Yeah.
You know, there's no, and I don't get excited by headphones. You know, and so that's it. Also, the latest. Let me rant for a minute myself. Okay, kids, gather. No, here's the thing. I don't like the new Apple ads. They're all about the apps.
Yeah,
everybody has apps.
Yeah,
they don't make the phone interesting, different, or better. They're just apps, you know,
yeah.
And when your entire line, their new tagline, if it's not an iPhone, it's not an iPhone. Really? Go back to Marketing 101 and ask about tautologies.
Exactly.
It's not a useful thing.
Now,
if it's not a, if it's not a chair, it's not a chair. I get that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Why,
sorry,
was there doubt?
You're right. It's not an iPhone. Is it an iPhone? It's not an iPhone! Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Eliminates that issue.
Right. So go ahead. You were going to ask a question.
Yeah. Okay. I've been an iPhone user since 2009, since my 3GS, and now I have a 5.
All right. Hold on. You got to hold on. Don't hang up.
Sure.
Don't hang up. We have to take a quick break.
Sure.
We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Jerry Seward, Dave Enright, me, Nick Francesco, Tom from Brockport, and you. It's 39 minutes after the hour at Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Before you call into our show, please make note of the following rules. 1. Turn your radio down. 2. Turn your radio down lower. 3. Remember, nobody has invented a good-sounding speakerphone yet. Don't use them. 4. Make sure you have a point. It makes for a more interesting show. 5. Calling does not guarantee you'll get on the air. No whining. 6. If you do get on the air, please do not tell the host what you just told the screener. We don't care. And 7. Is that radio turned down yet? We hope this will make for a more enjoyable program, and we thank you for your time.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Jerry Seward.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we have Tom from Brockport on the line, who is gone from a 3GS all the way up to a 5S, did you say?
Actually, it's a 5. What happened was my 4S that I loved shattered into pieces when I slipped on black ice back in December, and it the insurance actually replaced it with a 5.
Nice.
Yeah. So my question, basically, is what's wrong with Siri lately?
Why? What's she doing?
Well, actually, I've got it on he, but Siri just does not want to understand what I'm saying and or give me, when it does understand what I'm saying, give me any sort of results that are relevant to what I'm looking for. So I am through with Siri. And it's almost Ooh. Making me think of going to an Android.
Wow.
Whoa.
Well, you have to understand that mostly on an Android, it doesn't do all the cute stuff. Like, you can't ask the Android if it's in love with you.
Oh, I don't care.
Yeah. Well, there are people who do.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not a better half. I don't need a phone for that.
Yeah.
Wise man.
I will tell you that there are an awful lot of people asking the same question. Many
yeah.
of them not politely. And I'm not sure that there's a single answer. Often,
do you think with 9, iOS 9, it may get better?
I think the problem actually is that there's a connectivity issue.
Oh.
I think there's been, well, because don't forget, Siri's not actually in your phone.
Right.
Just like Google Now is not actually in your phone. What happens right. is both Siri and Google work exactly the same way. They sure. record your voice, shoot it up to the servers at either Apple or Google.
Yep.
It figures out what your question is, manufactures a response, and sends it back to you. The fact that that often happens in less than 2 seconds is shocking to me. But there have it. There you have it. But for a while, Apple was having a problem, and although they don't advertise, they're not as open as someplace like Google. But I believe they were having a DDoS attack, a distributed denial of service attack.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And that made Siri slow enough that it disconnected, right? Because if Siri doesn't get an answer in a certain amount of time, it doesn't mm-hmm. know what to do.
Well, it's not disconnecting. It's just not giving me, like, correct results at all. It's just, and I've reset, and I've backed up, and I've restored, and it just, it doesn't want to do what it should do. So I've kind of given up on Siri. I mean, it does simple things that I need to do, like set alarm for 9 a.m.
Right.
But if I ask it, where is Jimmy Z's in Brockport, New York?
Right.
It's like, I don't know what you're talking about, you know.
I don't know what to tell you because much, like I said, the simple things, set an alarm, play a song, yada, 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 that actually does happen inside your phone.
Okay.
But the other things like where's Jimmy Z's or what's the weather tomorrow or, you know, whatever that's all about, those come from the servers at Apple. And I don't know. I will tell you there are a bunch of people asking that question.
Is it possible that I need an update from my provider?
It's unlikely because, again, none of that has to do with you.
Right.
Or your phone. So if I were to say, the way you get that answer is to call me and I'll give you the answer, and you get through to me and I still give you a nonsense answer, the problem is not you or your phone. The problem is me.
Right.
Right? So the same thing with Siri. If Siri is giving you correct answers to things like set an alarm, play a song like that,
mm-hmm.
excuse me, all those things that happen in your phone, then Siri is working correctly on your phone.
Right.
It's that connection to Apple or something happening at Apple servers that is the issue.
Yeah, and I have great connectivity in Brockport. I'm right by the canal. And I have 5 dots and LTE.
Well, there you go.
So
then it's not your connection, so it's got to be the machine
AT&T.
At the other end. Yeah, it's got to be the machine at the other end. It's got to be Apple's Siri servers.
So I guess...
although, it's Apple. They're not going to tell you.
Mm-mm. Right.
I'm sorry.
And I've called and I've asked, and they kind of just shrug their shoulders.
Right. Right, and I'm sorry, but until they come out, you know, Google goes the other way. They tell you things you don't even want to know. But Apple is very quiet about things like that.
I also like Google's, context. You can say, when was Barack Obama born? And they'll tell you, and then you can say, what's his wife's name? You don't have to say... what's Barack Obama's
right? Opinion. His will relate back to Barack Obama. Right. That's a very nice thing. Right. But again, all of that stuff is coming from their servers up at
exactly. But there's right. all
but
these operating systems.
Are you saying that their servers
systems.
Are quote unquote smarter?
No. I would never say that out loud.
Oh, okay.
No.
So are you inferring?
Not here.
What I'm saying is that clearly. According to people having the same issue you're having on the internet, what it sounds like to me is that there is an issue at Apple's Siri servers at this time.
Okay.
That's as far as I will go in public because
sure.
I don't want to get sued. So basically
sure.
what I'm
well,
saying
we
is...
we can always probably, you know, discuss other time.
Now, the other thing you can do, by the way, is
yeah.
if you have the Chrome browser on a desktop or laptop...
I have it on my laptop. I also have it on my phone.
Well, Google Now works through that as well. You can
okay.
turn on voice commands
yep.
on your Google browser. You can also, anytime you type something into Google, that is exactly identical to using Siri. So if you were to say, not Siri, Google Now. So if you were to say, you know, where is Jimmy Z's, you'd get that answer. If you were to type that into a Google box, right? If you were to type that into Google.
Right.
Or
yeah, I know
ask your phone, you get the same answer.
As well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, is there a way to override Siri where I could just hold down the home button and have it use Google Now?
No.
I didn't think so.
No, I was
crossing
that's
my
not
going to
happen.
But
yeah.
Yeah.
Not that I know of. I would almost.
No, it's not.
Hold on. I have done an internet search, and it seems I was incorrect.
What?
I know. This is the first time. You can create a home button shortcut to Google Now. And this is actually fairly old. I just didn't know. I don't own an iPhone, so why would I look into this? You have to jailbreak your iPhone.
Nope. Not gonna
yeah, not going to happen. Okay. Yeah, no.
But thank you for the information.
Yeah. No. There's no.
Yes, yeah, say it. Didn't think you were going to let that happen.
No. I'm very against jailbreaking, you know, hacking, any of that. When I was a kid, that's another story. Long story short, I used to use AOL.
Oh yeah.
Back in 95.
Mm-hmm.
And in 2014, I was hired by AOL.
Wow, good for you.
Not so much. It was through, let's just say, SDS.
Ah.
One of the worst companies to work for ever.
Black mark things here on the show out loud.
So, that's just my personal opinion, right. Not the opinion of Asian or it's...
right. Yeah. Or any right-thinking human being. Yeah.
Yes,
I used
exactly.
to get that all the time. All right. Thank you, Tom. We appreciate
it. Well,
yeah. Have a good one.
Just one more thing. I know you're getting ready to wrap up.
Yeah.
I just want to say thank you guys for being around for so long and keeping the show alive. It's like my favorite show, and you know, just the fact that you guys are real and not voice tracked somewhere.
We should auto-tune, don't we?
If I could get transferred back to your producer, that would be awesome.
Not right now. We're
we can't.
You're wrapping up.
We got to wrap up, but you can certainly write to the station.
Yeah, write to Rob Litton.
Yep.
Okay, thank you so much,
and you guys have a great weekend.
All right, you too. Thank you so much. Well, that's it for another week. You've wasted 2 hours of your life with this nonsense, and we're done. I want to thank Jerry Seward, who came in here and just did a great job sitting in for Steve Ray. I want to thank Dave Enright, who showed up. Don't go away. George is coming in to play the best German music you'll hear all week. Michael is here to keep him on the straight and narrow. I'm going off to possibly have an adult beverage with my favorite wife. And we're done. So thank you all for listening to the longest running computer show in the known universe. We'll see you in 166 hours on Soundbites on the truly great and solely member-supported Jazz 90.1.